there is a land. A place in space-time, light years away. Where the best in progressive music of all types, rock, metal, electronic, and more, come together. It's time for you to take a journey to that magical realm where galaxies collide, the strangest of creatures lurk and slither, and rituals are enacted to bring about the dawning of a new age.
That's quite enough astral traveling from you. This is Progtopia, episode 126. And warm greetings to all of you in the land of Progtopia. Welcome to the program that features interviews, reviews, and discussions about both well-known and up-and-coming acts in Prague, a term we sometimes define loosely and proudly so. My name is Mark Ashby, and I'm the host of the show. Join us now for a trip through the wires, and hopefully you'll come out the other side ready to subscribe to the program and follow it on Facebook and Twitter. Visit Progtopia.com for past episodes and hear what you may have missed. For now, though, we press onward. We don't get a chance to talk about live albums or full concert videos on this show that much, so I was glad to get in the mail recently an advance copy on CD and DVD, and it'll be on Blu-ray also, of Circulive Majestic, a performance at the 2016 Rozfest from Circuline out of New York. Longtime listeners might recall that three members of Circuline were on the show back in episode 094, just after their Rozfest performance, and now that they're gearing up with a Pledge Music campaign for this release, I figured it was time to check in with them again. Keyboardist Andy Collier and drummer Darren Brannan talked with me about the reasons behind their choice to put out not just one, but two live performance products this year. This one is the first, more about the second one later. How they were helped by their friends in Ad Astra and the festival itself to make this show a reality, and what their plans are for the next couple of years for recording and touring. So, have a listen. Rest your head. No one said it would be easy to change the ways of the land, casting your lines from sinking sand. I don't want to follow you. I don't want your hollow view. With their male-female singing duo of Billy Spillane and Natalie Brown, Circuline is able to craft a well-rounded sound both in the studio and on stage, but I asked Darren why they decided to document the Rozfest experience for a later release.
I think it was one of the bigger events that we've had, certainly in front of the most amount of people, and, you know, it was lots of cameras. It was a great event, so I think we had to document it and release it. Unfortunately, it took almost 2 years to do it, but it is available coming up very shortly. So
good things come to those who wait. I know some other bands who have done the DVD via festival release route. So how was it working with George and his crew in Gettysburg to make this happen?
We had no problems. George was great to work with. You know, we knew beforehand that we were going to record this with the multi-camera video shoot. So everything was arranged beforehand with the multi-track audio recording. We knew we were going to have the cameras. George was great to work with. One of the things that was great about this Rozfest release is, like Darren said, it was one of our earliest kind of big performances on a big stage. And we wanted to capture it, you know, not only just for the fans, but it's also part of our history. I mean, hopefully we're going to be around a long time. And it also gave us a lot of experience to do future live projects. So, you know, we have this Syracuse Live Majestic product that's coming out now. And then in the fall of this year, we're going to have another live product, which is from our Prague Stock performance last year. Our intention is to build a worldwide fan base. And the only way we can do that is to have products so that people can experience us not only in the studio, but also live. And for us to get other live bookings in the U.S., in Europe, in Asia, in South America, people need to be able to see what we're capable of doing and the kind of show that we have. And so this has been kind of our plan to release this product now. The Prague Stock product in the fall will show a different show and a different lineup and a different set list. And, you know, we're hoping that these two products, you know, show people, you know, what we can do, and hopefully they'll like it. And hopefully, you know, not only will they purchase the products, but be fans and recommend us to other people. And hopefully it'll help us to get other bookings in the future when we're back out touring again in the second half of 2019.
Some bands that I've listened to on recordings and then I go see them live and it's a little bit of a letdown. But, you know, I got to say with Circuline, I can't say that because the atmosphere that it looks like you're able to create live and the theatrics that Natalie and Billy bring to their vocal performances, it really looks like it kicks it up a notch from the recordings, which are already really good. So what is the vibe that you're going for when you play an event like Rozfest or Prague Stock or any other of those live shows?
Going into any live performances, anything that we've done, the little tours or whatever that we've gone on, we do a lot of rehearsing. One of the things is that we do like to recreate, you know, the songs pretty close to what the records and I guess more importantly is for me is the vocal harmonies and that part of the song is represented very well. See, I don't know what maybe you're referring to when you go see a live band, you know, a band play live and it's a letdown. To me, it's usually the vocalist and or the harmonies or something like that. It just doesn't seem like it's, you know, good enough or it's not like the record or something of that nature.
Yeah, it's usually something like that on those lines.
Yeah, it's usually not the underlying instrumentation. It's usually kind of the vocals. And we're very, you know, conscious of that going into any live performances. And, you know, the great thing is that we have great singers. You know, Natalie and Billy are awesome. And then Andy does backups as well. He's got a great voice too. So, and they work very hard on getting those harmonies and that part of the show done. And I think it's, you know, it's kind of a natural thing for all of us, I believe, especially, you know, the front people to be enthusiastic and to kind of sell the song and, you know, get into it as much as they can, you know, for the live performances. So
for the record on the DVD, Darren, besides being an awesome drummer and songwriter and arranger, is also does all of our graphics. So Darren, all the packaging for the CD DVD or the CD Blu-ray, all the authoring, all of the menus, all the stuff that you see, Darren did all of that. So, he actually picked all the music to navigate between all the stuff. So I just
did do all that. I did many hours of doing
hundreds of hours.
Yeoman's work. Well, I mean, in that sense of it made an effect on me, not like, oh, I realized that somebody pieced all this together, because that's not what you want. You want it to be all seamless and everything. But it's everything just kind of flows, and it's really slickly done with these multiple camera angles and close-ups. Like, it's not just, you know, a long shot with one close-up camera, you know, here and there. You got like over the shoulder things and that kind of going on. Were you at all distracted by all this extra equipment that was around?
Actually, no. I mean, what was great, the way that this was shot is that they had, I believe, you know, cameras stage left, stage right, and center, you know, out in the audience. And then we had one backstage camera that was shooting, you know, me playing the drums and then Andy playing keys. And then I believe Andy had like a GoPro on his keyboards. And then we might have had one other camera. So to me, when you're playing and you're on the stage, you really don't pay much attention to any of that at all. So. Yeah,
actually, you know what was distracting for me actually was the light show, because that light show that they did at Rozfest was so great, because since we knew going into Rozfest that we were going to be recording, George Roldan did a really great job of having us communicate with the light show people for the festival. And we actually sent them our set list in advance so they could kind of create, they could kind of match the light show and get, you know, to match the music. Mm-hmm. And what was really cool, there was just a couple times that I was in the middle of playing something and those gobos would come sweeping down across the keyboards that they have spotlights and stuff would be spinning around. And there was like a couple times I was like, whoa, that's cool. And then I was like, oh, where?
I got a part.
Where am I in this song? It's just, yeah, I mean, it was awesome. That, you know, but it's just, you know, it's just enough to distract you. You go, oh, man, that looks cool. And then you're flying out.
So not so, so much the cameras, just, yeah, everything else happening if you're ADD I am.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So when we got to Progstock, we were a little more prepared for it. Or I was anyway. I don't know.
Yeah. How much input did you have into the final product, the CD and the video, like the mix and how it looked and all that sort of thing?
Well, just about every part of it. It was a 50-50 split between Andy and myself. Mm-hmm. We had Joel Simkus do the mixing in, for the audio, and then I put all the video together. So, you know, we were pretty much, you know, knee-deep in all of this, so mm-hmm. all of it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is for us, you know, one of our goals is to average releasing a product a year. And we really wanted to get this product out last year. So we would have had our first album out in 2015, the second studio album in 2016, and this product would have been out last year. And, you know, Mark, basically we played some gigs in Florida last year. We went on Cruise the Edge. Darren and I went on tour with another artist in the spring as paid sidemen last year in the spring. And then we went to England in the summer opening for Isle Earth and played a festival over there. And then we had Progstock in the fall. And we also had a new guitarist join the band. And there just was just not time to get the product out. But we really, you know, we definitely, like Darren said, we, I don't want to say agonized, but we definitely scrutinize this product because, you know, this is part of our legacy, and it's, we want to release a quality product every year. We want people to buy it. We want people to enjoy it, and we want them to tell all their friends about it. So, because this is, since this was our first video product, we pulled off all the DVDs off of our shelf, and we looked at other bands who had performed at Rozfest and released products. We looked at, you know, Steven Wilson and Yes and Genesis DVDs, and Darren's an encyclopedia of Prague. So he has an even bigger, you know, mind for this than I do. And we just looked at everybody else's product in the marketplace and we said, okay, we want to be as good as these guys. So what do we have to do to make it as good as we possibly can? And, you know, a lot of that's on Darren with his eye for stuff.
The great thing about Rozfest and George and his crew was that they were able to provide us with, you know, a really good multi-track audio recording. And, you know, the camera crew provided us with, you know, a lot of raw footage that we were able to put this thing together with. So mm-hmm. kudos to them. And then, yep. you know, I'm going to give a little credit to Circuline because, you know, you know.
the side men to you two guys, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Now I'm sure. Speaking of
kudos, I just want to throw this out there. Harold Skeet.
Oh, yeah,
bass.
We have to mention him.
We got to mention Harold because here's a guy who'd been playing bass with us got Harold as a sub 2 weeks before the show. 2 weeks. Harold mm-hmm. was with us for 2 weeks, and he worked his butt off. He put in a killer performance, you know, on loan. And we're going to also give a shout out to Joe Narduli and Long Island prog band Ad Astra. Thank you so much for loaning Harold to us. You know, and we just can't say enough about what he did for us.
He's a great guy. He's a great bass player. I still to this day don't know how he did that. I mean, it's not like we have the most complicated music, but we're certainly not the least complicated music. And he came in, and you know, like Andy said, 2 weeks. You know, and you know, it was. A darn good performance. I mean, really, really, yeah. really good. So yeah. very pleased with him. He did a great job.
That's why we threw him the solo. We were like, man, you know, you deserve this.
It's a good solo, too. I like a good bass solo. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, if people want to hear this bass solo and all the other stuff, it's not, as we're recording this interview, it's not out yet, but folks can get in on a piece of the action ahead of time, as a lot of folks, a lot of bands do these days. So why don't you tell people how they can do that?
CircuLive1.com. CircuLive1, and the number 1.com. CircuLive1.com. Which will forward you to our Pledge Music page. So if you already have a Pledge Music account, just go to pledgemusic.com and type in CircuLine, and it'll take you to our pledge campaign. And what's really cool about that right now is that we have a lot of pre-order exclusives that are going to be available only until April 17th. Now, after that date, starting on April 18th, the campaign will go to a pre-order, you know, just a pre-order type of campaign for another month, and the street date for this is May 18th. However, you're going to lose all your chance to get the exclusives that are available now. So there's a bunch of bundles, there's packages, there are the bronze, silver, gold, platinum, titanium levels. There's, oh, Darren, what do we have? We have PDF downloads, we have autographs, yeah. We have pictures, we have T-shirts, we have
an acoustic guitar, we can play in your home, oh, yeah. Acoustic or full live shows. You know what? Go Pledge.
If you go to pledgemusic.com and type in CircuLine, you'll see all the levels that are available. So at the time of this recording, you only have about 2 weeks left. You have until April 17th. And then all of those pre-order exclusives are going away. So you want to go check that out as soon as possible.
Hurry, 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 folks. Yeah.
Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Arrest my cage here and fight through my fears, scaling the summit for truth.
Are you guys working on any new material lately? I know you got the new guitarist, and you're working on the prog stock thing. So just wondering if you were
Time to squeeze it just in. So happens.
Ooh.
Yes,
good.
We are working on a third record. We've had some preliminary sessions with our new guitar player, which have gone very well, very enthusiastic, and yes, we will be proceeding with that throughout the rest of this year. So, very excited.
Well, that would be due next year sometime then, if you're going to catch up a little bit with these two live releases this year and then to make up for last year. Yeah.
Right.
You're due, guys. Or you will be due. Cool.
Yes.
How about any more live dates in the near future? Anything happening on that front?
The plan right now is we're releasing the Rozfest product now. We're making the third studio album now. We released the prog stock product in the fall. Next year, the first half of the year is going to be a promo period, an extended promotional cycle for this third studio album. And then we should be out touring summer of 2019, fall of 2019. That's when we'll be doing our next touring cycle. And one of the reasons we're doing that is because one of the ways that we're working on building a global fan base is, back to Darren. Thank you, Darren. Releasing videos for every track on our albums, every vocal track for sure, and some of the instrumental tracks.
Ooh.
Same thing for this third studio album. You know, we're, for the rest of this year, we're releasing more videos. Next year, we're going to be releasing videos during the big pre-release promotional period. And for us, we're excited to continue to create new music, and it's important to try to bring as much of an audience as we can when we go to, because you know, when we go to present this music, we want as many people to experience it as possible. Mm. And, you know, hopefully we're going to continue to grow that audience or get some opening slots for some other larger bands who are ahead of us. So the focus, you know, is really, besides these live products and then the videos, and is also building that audience. So when we go play live, we're in front of more people.
One of the main goals, you know, I don't know if a lot of bands have this, but for our third record, what we would like to accomplish is to have the same people that recorded the record play it live. That's all I want is we've had a little bit of a kind of a scrambled lineup from the beginning. So at least this is one of my underlying goals, is to whoever's in the room in the studio recording it, I want on the stage playing it. That's all.
Let's make it happen. So, all right.
Hopefully let's make it happen.
Fingers crossed.
The four core members of the band are Darren, myself, and Billy and Natalie.
Right.
And now we really are solid with Alec Darson in the guitar position. And we have a very short list of bass players who we're talking to now. And we're going to be looking to work with them over the summer. And so, you know, we'll be the second half of this year with all this new material. And then, like Darren said, hitting the road next year with a solid lineup, you know, for the future. Solid lineup for the future.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with Alec Darson, but we had the pleasure of seeing him perform at Rozfest with Fright Pig. And I was just blown away. I could not believe that band, and I could not believe Alec. You know, I was a big fan. We did ask him to mix our second record, and that's how we became, you know, kind of colleagues and friends and stuff. And so it was just a very natural kind of an invitation for him to kind of join us on the third record. And thank goodness he was enthusiastic and wanted to participate. So, you know, adding him to this band has been a great thing for us, and it's one of the aspects of you know, being excited about writing this third record is to have him in the room with us. So we're very happy with Alec.
Definitely looking forward to it. If it's anything like what you put out so far, it's going to be a good one. How about let's give these folks that are listening some websites, social media pages, anything you want to point folks toward, plug the Kickstarter or the Pledge of Music one more time?
Our website is circulinemusic.com, facebook.com/circulinemusic, twitter.com/circulinemusic, instagram.com/circulinemusic. And if you go to pledgemusic.com, PLEDGE, pledgemusic.com, do a search for Circuline, and you'll see our new Circulive Majestic product, which is our first live CD DVD or CD Blu-ray that's now available with exclusive pre-order, exclusive pre-order exclusives that you can only get until April 17th. We have not mentioned Boleto at all, and I do want to mention, we should mention Boleto.
For sure.
I know. Boleto joined us in January of 2016, so maybe February. So he was only with us for about 3 months. And was that his second gig with us?
Yeah, second or third.
It was relatively new. And you know, if you're a fan of kind of like a Alan Holdsworth, or I don't want to say Steve Hackett meets Alan Holdsworth, but Boleto was definitely a jazzy fusion rock kind of player. So and Boleto played on some of our tracks on our second album, Counterpoint. And so if you're a guitar player fan and you like Alan Holdsworth and you like that kind of a style, Boleto did a great job on that concert at Rozfest. And by the way, if you're a Boleto fan and you like that kind of a thing, you definitely need to purchase his product because there won't be any other products with Boleto, because he toured with us. He toured England with us last summer, but then he moved on, and now we've got Alec. And you know, if you're a completist and you're a Circuline fan and you want to have all the products that we produce, you're going to get to see and hear the band as we evolve through different chapters in our career. And that was a very specific time that captured us. And, you know, and then we will evolve into a different chapter with Alec on guitar. And it's a different anyway. And I just want to mention that Darren will be upset if we don't talk about how awesome he is. So I just wanted to mention another word, how awesome Darren is.
Yes, let's make sure we capitalize on that sentiment, please.
Okay. A band full of awesome people, past and present.
Yes.
All right. Well, okay. Once again, we've had, last time we had Billy also, but this time again, we had Andrew and Darren from Circuline. The CircuLive Majestic Rozfest DVD, CD, Blu-ray, all of that stuff, you could get it. But like you said, if you want some of those perks, you better get them before the 17th. You can still order it after that, but all the cool stuff is going to go away after that. So, guys, I hope this does really well for you. I hope you have your third album out as promised next year, and maybe I'll be able to come catch you somewhere on the East Coast. So thanks for being on the show again. All the best, guys.
Very good. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you so much, Mark.
If you want a sneak peek of the concert, you can find this song, as performed at the show, up on YouTube, direct from the CircuLive recording itself. This is Stereotypes.
The look in your eye, a mountain of sadness, let it go free, waiting patiently. Thank you.
Circuline Music is the place to go for all the information. And again, get those pledges in before April 17th if you want some of the fun perks that go along with supporting the band on this. Now we must move on because, ooh, there's that music again. Apple says it's going to phase out iTunes downloads for real this time. Is that going to affect you or your favorite artists much? Prog supergroups can be hits or duds, so which category do we think Gizmodrome falls into? And what about short-form videos? Are they good for anything in this day and age besides being a cool vanity project for a band? Well, you'll find out all that next on the Prog Squad.
Chuck, take your position.
And the Prog Squad is on the air. This is the program where we engage in discussions, debates, and other words with a D about all the latest news in progressive music and in its many forms. And hopefully in the process we enlighten, entertain, and other words with an E in all this elephant talk. We have the band all together today! It's amazing! So we need to, for those of you who have been away from the program for a while or haven't heard from everybody, we should introduce all the regular panelists so that you can put the names with the voices, and hopefully they can explain why they're qualified to be here, if anyone's qualified to be here. I'll start stateside here with Mr. Jason Spencer, please.
Hey, guys, this is Jason. I'm from the Prog Mind. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, or theprogmind.com.
Well, I'm David. I'm from the European Perspective and Bad Elephant Music, and I don't know if I'm qualified to be anywhere.
David Elliott, that is. They don't like saying their last names here. That's why I said, because Jason last time.
Oh, yeah. You've got to keep it anonymous, man. GDPR, you know?
All right. Edit it out. And returning to the program for the first time in probably almost a year, we have Mr. Progzilla himself.
Yes, I am Archbishop Makarios. I'm Cliff Pearson. I am the chief herder of cats at Progzilla Radio, the UK's only dedicated prog radio station.
Yes, all right. And, of course, I host Progtopia, which is where you're hearing this show. And that's about all I do these days because I got tired of doing two separate shows at once. Anyway, first up.
He just dropped us like.
I just shifted the focus.
You should do what David does. You should do what David does. Exceptionally long shows.
Exceptionally long.
He's never done his 4.5 hours.
Exceptionally long shows and not very often.
Yeah, if you're going to listen to the European Perspective, yes, you need to take an entire weekend to really process one show. So anyway, first up for this edition, it's been rumored for a couple of years now that corporate monolith and human rights abuser, allegedly, Apple, might be ending the platform that for a while was synonymous with music downloads, that of course being iTunes. According to a report I recently read on altpress.com, although I'm sure it's been elsewhere, Apple Music head honcho Jimmy Iovine cites the increased popularity of streaming services as the potential reason behind this. He is quoted as saying, "The streaming services are all charging $9.99 and everyone has the same music. Sooner or later, something's got to give." All right, so the reported plan has iTunes giving up the ghost in early 2019, about a year from now, if you believe this. There's nothing concrete that's actually been mentioned. Although all those downloaded songs will still be available to you, something like 35 billion tunes have been downloaded. So as I often do when topics like this arise, I'm going to turn first to our label boss, Mr. Elliott, to ask what you think this move would mean for labels and artists should it go through.
For labels and artists, I can't see it really making a huge amount of difference. The amount of revenue that we generate from downloads from iTunes Store and other digital platforms has actually gone down significantly. And I think this is what's behind the whole reasoning. If Apple are going to close it down, the reason that they're going to do this is because people just aren't buying downloads anymore. They're all going for streaming. They're all paying that $9.99 all-you-can-eat fee. Mm. And as a result of that, you know, we're not actually getting any revenue from it. And that really is the only reason you do that. The streaming is something that we do for exposure, because you don't generate any money from that at all. So really, in a sense, it's a kind of done deal. And I suspect that where Apple go, Amazon and any of the other digital stores who offer downloads will probably follow. Where it may sort of hang around a bit, I suppose, is the digital platforms that are a bit more niche. So Bandcamp, for instance, is the one that we use, and a lot of independent bands also use it. The nice thing about Bandcamp is you've got a lot more control over the music that you put up there. So I think those little niche type of offerings will actually, they'll probably continue to thrive, because there is a group of people who actually use that, and they prefer it to the big corporate digital platforms. The folk using iTunes or using Amazon MP3, they've probably all gone to, or they're in the process of going to Apple Music now. So I don't think it's going to make a huge amount of difference to producers of music at all. Maybe to consumers, that there are going to be some who prefer to download their stuff, but not to labels and artists.
Well, Cliff, can I turn to you as a broadcaster, and I assume a consumer as well? I don't know if iTunes has been a main platform of yours, or if you use other things. I know that we often just receive things through the email interwebs from labels and agents and things like that. But how do you see something like this, like if it's not just going to be iTunes, but all of these download platforms, does this affect you at all?
From a broadcasting perspective, probably not. I mean, iTunes is a platform that I've used but have moved away from over the years. But this is, from a technical and user perspective, this is going to upset a lot of people, although they may not realize it yet. Especially iTunes users are quite used to being able to get a new machine and just download their music to it, you know, what they've already paid for. Mm-hmm. If Apple go down this road, that's not necessarily going to be possible any longer. And there's a big risk that people are going to lose huge chunks of their libraries. And, you know, let's face it, unless you're completely anal about your music like I am, and I guess most of the panel are, most users don't bother backing up their library.
Yeah.
So, and the thing is, it's all very well Apple saying, yes, you can stream it whenever you wish, but what about when you haven't got a network connection?
Mm-hmm.
Very
true.
Unless there's some kind of offline storage option, which is kind of counter to what they stand for, this is going to be yet another example of a major multinational shooting itself in the foot.
Well, they have plenty of Chinese folks who will build new devices for it, I'm sure. But anyway. My politics showing through it all. Anyway, Jason, how do you think this is going to affect you, or maybe people that or, you know, bands that you like, just in general? What are your thoughts on it all?
I just don't think iTunes is a major moneymaker for prog bands anyways. I don't know if it's the personality of progressive music or not. It just seems like prog fans don't really use iTunes very much. And maybe it's because of that, like, plastic corporate infrastructure. I think, like David said, that Bandcamp and some of these other platforms are just going to see a huge boost in sales. Well, maybe not huge, just whoever is downloading iTunes is going to go there now. But, you know, I think prog fans in general like to buy CDs and vinyl if they can, rather than downloads anyways. So. Yeah.
Well, there's another sort of side story with that your comment there kind of segues into very nicely, so thank you for that. That I had been reading recently that, you know, to go along with this, I mean, streaming obviously is the wave of the future. It's, you know, kind of the inevitable Leviathan lurking in the water there. But CDs and vinyl have started to outpace digital downloads now. And one wonders, is that a trend, or is that just because downloads have dropped off so much that now maybe CD and vinyl just needed a little bit of a boost just to get over them? I mean, I don't know if that might be
the
David thing too.
I agree. 100%.
Yeah, it's just...
I just think downloads have dropped off so much that I don't think, I think CDs and vinyl have just kind of remained the same, although vinyl is going up, obviously, but I think CDs and vinyl are remaining basically the same. The people that are going to buy that have always bought that and will always buy that. And
until we die,
you know, the fickle normal consumer who went to downloads from CD and vinyl in the first place, you know, now they're skipping to something new. And just like you said, hopefully they backed up their library along the way. Cause I think it was Microsoft Zune. You know, we had a bunch of stuff I remember in that marketplace, and that's just gone.
Yep.
Just it's gone. I mean, they have some new music platform, but I don't think any of the music's available in there. So
a good example of this is if I take a band who we're currently doing a release with at the moment, which is The Fierce and the Dead. So their third album's out in May. Get that plug in there. That's nice.
Hey. It's a good band. I'll allow it.
it's currently in pre-order. And in terms of unit sales on CDs,
how much is it, Dave?
It's well, I'm glad you asked that, Cliff. It's £10 to buy on CD, and it's £16 to buy on vinyl. But if you go along and pre-order, you can get a special bundle where you get a bonus CD and a limited edition print by the splendid Mark Buckingham for £15 and £20, respectively. Thank you for asking.
What's the URL, please?
The URL. Just look up The Fierce and the Dead on Facebook.
On you'll find Googles.
It. Okay. Yeah. on the Googles. It's on the Bud Elephant music sales site. But anyway, as I was trying to say, the vinyl sales are doing extremely well. They're doing much better than the vinyl sales of the previous album because we didn't do it on vinyl.
that would help, yeah.
100% better. The CD sales are also doing extremely well, probably a little bit better than the second album that we released. The downloads, we're doing very, very little. Whereas with the second album, we did loads. We did a lot of downloads. So there's 5 years between those two. That shows you, I think that's probably typical of the type of pattern that we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with that.
I guess I never really saw the point of pre-ordering a download anyways.
No, it's bizarre. I don't know why people do that. Push button, exactly. You know? I shouldn't say that, but because you know, there are some people who do it, and God bless them because they're paying for it. But that's not something I do myself.
Just want to make sure my computer's on that day, and so I can get it. I guess I don't know. What it is. Yeah, hopefully that Bandcamp, you know, it does seem to be a more artist-friendly platform than some of these other ones have been. So yeah. If downloads do survive, maybe that is the place to do it. But I mean, Bandcamp, obviously, you can buy hard copies of things as well. So I guess we'll see how this plays out if Apple does pull the trigger on this. And then if that's a domino effect with Amazon and all the other ones that might follow suit, I guess we'll see. But next for us, we will play our Love It or Shove It game. We have retitled Give It a Spin or Throw It in the Bin. Basically, we'll take a release of some sort and we will collectively order you either to add it to your collection or to run away screaming. Or maybe some sort of nuance in between. We'll find out. So last year, there was quite a lot of noise, as I recall, surrounding a supergroup who would be releasing their self-titled debut album. It consisted of members of The Police, King Crimson, PFM, and Level 42. That's quite a potpourri there. So they got some star power behind them and some prog cred as well. But is the resulting whole more or less than the sum of its parts, in our opinion? So, Cliff, may I turn to you first on this one? And could I get your opinion, yay or nay, sir, on Gizmodrome?
Give me some of that love. Give me some of that fire. Give me more of the sky above. Of this I'll never tire. Give me plenty of time to get everything right. Give me some of that.
Bin it. Next question, please.
What's bin it? All right.
I shall elaborate slightly.
Okay, please.
I had big expectations of this. When I saw who was involved, I was quite excited. And boy, was I disappointed. I'm sorry. It's to borrow a word that David uses on this show quite a bit. It was execrable. It really was one of the worst things I've heard in an awful long time. I'm so disappointed by it.
All right. Well, no beating around the bush there. Does anyone care to speak up in its favor? before I give my opinion?
Well, so.
All right.
when I saw this, you know, I don't know if any of you cook, but you know, if you take a mixture of ingredients, so you take some salt and some honey and some chili peppers, and you mix it all together, it's not going to taste very good, is it? So you look at that mixture of musicians and you think, oh, you know, Stuart Copeland and Edgin Belew and the Italian guy. Mark King Thumb King, out of level 42. You think that mixture is going to be absolutely horrible, you know, when you look at it. So you listen to the album and you realise, yes, actually, it is going to be absolutely horrible.
But why? What is? Well, okay, I'll get Jason. Maybe we can discuss a little bit more later. Jason, any positive things to say about this or?
I mean, obviously, the musicianship is great. I mean, you know, on point. But, like, I like the Police and all. I do. But you can hear a strong, you know, they always kind of had strong, I don't know if I want to call them reggae influences.
Well, certainly the early years, yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the music. And it's like they're trying to combine, you know, exactly soulful guitar solos or something with that. And, you know, like a playfulness that kind of comes off as, you know, off-putting. And so I couldn't even get through, you know, more than a couple songs.
All right. I guess I'm going to be the most positive, although
that doesn't say much.
It's yeah. I will say that my first impression of it, of the first few songs that came out, I thought, not in a million years. But for this, I actually did go listen to the entire album. They had it posted on YouTube. So I said, all right, even though I didn't get this, you know, in any other form, I'm going to listen to it on YouTube. There are a few songs in there that, you know, they're all right. However, as a whole, I don't know that I can follow along with this. And maybe, I don't know if, and this has been asked and answered elsewhere, but why, if you have Adrian Belew and Mark King both in your band, why is Stuart Copeland singing your freaking songs? Singing being in quotes there. I'm not exactly sure. I think that's the main thing. Like, the music is pretty decent, but if it had just been one of the other two guys singing, I think that might have pushed me over to, okay, well, maybe y'all should listen to this. Does anybody else feel that way?
Oh, absolutely. It's such a bizarre
even the
decision.
Italian.
Right,
even
yeah. Italian. I'll take an accent.
I'm not even sure you'd really call that singing.
Right, that's why I said singing or whatever it is. Yeah.
It's a sort of weird squawking, isn't it? It's sort of...
It's the worst American accent for anyone who's not American that I have ever heard in my life. Some sort of thing with overpronounced R's and yeah.
He is American.
Yeah, I know. He's from near, well, originally from near where I live in the D.C.
area.
Oh,
sorry, I thought you were saying he wasn't American. You're trying to disown him, aren't you? That's what you're doing.
Yeah. But it's like whenever I hear in Monty Python when they try to do American accents. So what you're saying is that, you know, that's what Stuart Copeland sounds like, and he's American and sounds like that. So, you know.
It's what we call a cod accent.
I guess, yeah. Well, all right. So, folks, take a pass on this one.
I will wait till the heat death of the universe before I listen to this again.
Do you know what his singing voice actually reminded me of?
What's that?
Hearing William S. Burroughs.
Okay.
That's what he sounded like to me.
Yeah. Okay.
Like quoting from the Naked Lunch or something.
I can follow that. Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, pass on Gizmodrome. Not that, you know, we dislike any of the other. I'm mostly disappointed in Adrian Belew. I don't know. It's, you know, for someone I respected so much. I know. All right. Okay. Well, of the four of us, age wise, moving along here, of the four of us, I think I'm probably the only one who's truly formative music appreciation years came in that mid-80s to early 90s when MTV... you weren't that much before, and Jason's not that much after, but, you know, I'm in that nice little mid-40s age range right now myself. But that's when MTV and music videos were everywhere. I mean, it seemed like...
Oh, I'm way after that.
Jason just got out of high school.
It's just showing off.
It's not so much that. I'm just,
they're,
you know...
Both, they're both just bloody showing off.
Well,
what time do you have to be home, Jason?
With a... With
Someone
age comes
Jason
wisdom. Look at it that way.
To buy some sweets, for God's sake.
At any rate, these little mini movies that we had on every, at least in the States, I assume it was the same in the UK, where it was just like every network or cable channel had some sort of hour-long show or even, you know, overnight, like six-hour-long programs that were all devoted to videos. For whatever pop star or hair band, everybody in between. I remember Michael Jackson's Thriller. That was must-see TV when I was, about 11 or 12, something like that. But in the years since then, for a multitude of reasons, the video hasn't really been as much of a focal point for bands, but they're still doing them, I assume, ostensibly to promote their albums. And some of them are still pretty slick. I'm thinking of the new Camelot video I just watched yesterday. Fairly decent song, but the video, you know, pretty nice for, you know, what's out there for a general kind of a prog metal band. But here's the thing, and Jason, you'll be first this time. Do you think bands really need to make videos anymore? I mean, especially lesser-known bands that we often find in prog and these related genres that we tend to like?
I don't think they need to necessarily. I do think that it's quite impressive if they can have like a nicely produced music video of some sort. I think that that impresses people to maybe want to check them out more. You know, there's a few bands out there right now that have great music, but the production values on everything from the cover art to their lyric videos or something on YouTube are just horrible. But then on the other end of the spectrum, bands that might be even lesser known than they are, you know, they just maybe they have a friend who's in video production or something. And, you know, they have a really sweet video that really drums up interest. And so I think, you know, concept videos, they're kind of proggy in and of themselves sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think of Major Parkinson's concept video for their Black Box album last year. But I don't know if that is necessary, but it's really cool. Makes it kind of a package deal with the album itself. But I do think, and this is kind of a little off topic, I do think that bands need to make their songs, you know, at least one or two off an album accessible in some way, shape, or form, whether it's SoundCloud or Bandcamp or something. Because there are some bands, there was one I specifically am thinking of last year, Single-Celled Organism is their name.
I know who this is.
All right, I'm interested.
And they literally didn't have any of their music accessible whatsoever, didn't have any music on YouTube, nothing. But they put like a making of video on YouTube and all this other stuff, and with not really any music being heard in it. and they wondered why there wasn't as much interest, even though the guy who wrote it was a producer of a fairly big, you know, Euro pop, you know, artist. And it's because no one could even, you know, see if it'd be something they'd want to listen to in the first place, you know? Mm. So I think that's important. That doesn't have to be a concept video or music video. Doesn't even have to be a lyric video. It can just be the cover art on there. But I think, you know, making it accessible in some way is important.
Mm-hmm. To get back to The Fierce and the Dead here, David, maybe they had a video recently. It wasn't, you know.
They did. Like, in fact, there are two now. There was another one released.
That's right.
This
okay.
Morning.
Oh, yes. That is brand new. Yeah. I still haven't watched that one yet. So, I mean, maybe can you give us some insight into, I don't want you necessarily to speak for them. Maybe you don't know what the answer is, but what their insight was into, you know, doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it was to get YouTube followers, you know, pure and simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a big audience on YouTube. And if you put a good video up there and promote it right, lots of people will see that. And maybe some of them will order an album, or they'll come to a gig, or they'll just develop an interest in The Fierce and the Dead, which is all good stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think sort of, you know, Jason sort of hit the nail on the head there when talking about production values. It has to be good. It has to be decent. And The Fierce and the Dead, you know, we were very lucky with both of the videos. They were produced by a guy called Mark Duffy, who's an animator, and just as fantastic work. So, you know, he's brought in some live footage and done some animations in the style of a sort of late 80s, early 90s computer game, the old sort of wireframe graphics type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks really good. What I think probably is a bit more difficult is if you're trying to do something with the high production values that were prevalent at the time when MTV was very popular, because that's just completely out of the reach of a lot of bands. Making music now, of course, is accessible to most bands because you can do it at home to a very large extent. You can do it using any decent computer and some software. But making good videos is much more difficult, unless you're doing something which is purely animated, and that's a time-consuming thing and something which requires a lot of skill, which typically speaking, you need someone who does it all the time or does it properly to do. Getting to the question, is it worth doing? I think, yes, it is, but maybe not for the same reasons that it used to be, and certainly for smaller acts and for independent labels. Videos are useful as a promotional tool in this new media world, which we all inhabit. So YouTube, Facebook and all that sort of stuff. It's something which Facebook, for example, it lionizes video content. It's something which it promotes and which will be seen over and above just someone writing some stuff saying, we've got a new album, buy it.
Yeah.
So the reasons why you would do it are perhaps different to the ones that they used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's part of me that thinks, well, some of this, not all of it, but some of it is a little bit of a vanity kind of a thing. You know, oh, we've got a video. You know, here, look at our video.
Oh,
but,
definitely.
I mean, there is some promotional purpose to it.
Yeah,
Cliff, absolutely. Haven't heard from you on this yet, though. I mean, do you have anything to add, augment, disagree?
Well, I think, of course, they need to be making videos. Many people discover new music through avenues like YouTube. So if you don't create a video, especially if you've already been doing so, is quite a step backwards. Video is a natural promotional tool for many bands, not just in the prog world, but throughout the whole of the music industry, or what's left of it these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I like watching them, but then sometimes, you know, you can tell within the first 30 seconds if, you know, this was done for a few $1,000 or a few dollars or pounds or shiny brass buttons, as Cliff would say. So, yeah, I tend to like the ones that have some sort of a component that's more than just the band playing around in some abandoned warehouse. I think I've seen enough of those videos to last me for a while.
That's half the videos ever made.
Right, I know. And lyric videos, I just skip those. I don't do any lyric videos. Don't interest me, really. Honestly, I know there are some people that like it. I know Jason, you like to dissecting lyrics sometimes on Prog Mind, but for me, it's just sort of a you know. But I mean, it's fun to have, I think. But yeah, gone are the days when we have those 6-hour overnight shows that we always tried to stay up for, and my friends and I never made it past 3 a.m. To finish watching them all. But
it's funny you should mention those late night shows. I don't think you had the same thing in the States, but I think Dave will probably remember. Back in the early 90s, Channel 4 used to have a couple of hours of ambient music and animations on a Saturday night, Sunday morning.
Do you remember that, Dave? I do remember that very well.
Yeah. I miss that. I really miss that.
I can't imagine that over here, but yeah.
It was great.
It was great post-gig, wasn't it?
Post-gig or after an evening of...
celebrating?
At a local hostelry, yeah.
Indeed. Moving swiftly on.
Yes, moving swiftly on. Well, moving swiftly on to we're done for this segment of the show. But, I think it'll do it for us for this. But we need one last website or social media plugs from everybody. Cliff, let's get you in first on this one.
Progzilla Radio. You can find all about us at www.progzilla.com.
European Perspective at www.theeuropeanperspective.com or indeed at progzilla.com.
Indeed.
Who we syndicate to. And then... And Bad Elephant Music is at music.badelephant.co.uk, where you can indeed pre-order the Fierce and the Dead's new album.
How much is it, Dave?
It's £10 on CD. It's £5 on digital download if you want to pre-order it on digital download, but I don't see why you would.
You're lucky I like you. Let you do all of these. All right, Jason, how about you?
The usual amount. David.
Yes.
The standard amount. Yes, the standard amount.
Let Jason talk here. He's got to give his plug here. All right.
All right. This is Jason from the Prog Mind. Checks out at theprogmind.com.
All right. Let's go. I'll check out one of those Polish bands Jason loves so much. All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much. We'll be right back. was good to have the boys back together. So look for another segment with the whole gang in the next episode as well, where we'll discuss topics including Frank Zappa's hologram and bands we took an unfortunately long time to appreciate. Now, though, a return to the potentially unpopular positions segment of the show. I'll be relatively brief this time because, in my mind, there's really no argument about this, although I'm sure others might beg to disagree with me anyway. Recently, as I record this, maybe not as you listen to it, but here in the U.S., a live broadcast of a classic musical was performed on NBC, one of my favorites, actually, and it's one that I have performed in. So, for your scrutiny and review, I submit to you in this PUP this conjecture. Jesus Christ Superstar is high prog rock.
Talk to me, Jesus Christ. You have been brought here, manacled, beaten by your own people. Do you have the first idea why you deserve it? Listen, King of the Jews, where is your kingdom? Look at me, am I a Jew?
Back in the early 70s, when they were but wee lads in their 20s, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice conceived of a retelling of the biblical story of the last week of Jesus' life, but from the point of view of his disciple Judas, long portrayed as the villain who betrayed Christ to the Romans for 30 pieces of silver and later hung himself out of remorse for basically sentencing the Messiah to death. Of course, Christians believe that Judas's actions were part of an inevitable plan for Jesus to die so that humanity's sins could be forgiven and those who believe would find everlasting life in heaven after they passed on. Thus, Jesus Christ Superstar was born. It wasn't originally supposed to be a staged musical, though. Recorded as a rock opera in 1970, it received its Broadway debut the next year and has gone on to be made into multiple filmed versions and countless revivals, both professional and not. And as I said, I even portrayed Pontius Pilate in a local community theater version 2 summers ago. And it was in that experience that I realized just how prog Superstar is. I mean, really. It's one thing to hear the odd and rapidly changing time signatures in a song like Trial Before Pilate, which I played to get us into this, the shifting chords and dissonances that you don't often find in squeaky clean Broadway or West End shows, and the overall concept album nature of the full work as originally conceived. Sure, there are straight-ahead tracks like I Don't Know How to Love Him or campier things like King Herod's Song. Everybody knows those. Those things can even appear on broadcast radio and probably did. But even bands like Early Genesis had their I Know What I Like moments, you know? Those are allowed in prog. Webber started to play it safer in his later shows, I'd say, so I would stop short of calling him a progressive artist on the whole. But although there are other productions that are challenging musically in this sort of realm, I don't think any of them that are popular can even approach the progginess of Jesus Christ Superstar. I mean, there are entire songs in 5-4 or 7-8, or at least huge sections of them. You can look at the scores sometime if you don't believe me. So, no, that doesn't in and of itself make it prog, but it sure don't hurt. You should probably listen to it again if you haven't in a while, or get one of the 70s recordings, those are the better ones, and check it out for the first time if you've never really listened. If you're a prog fan who turns up his or her nose at Broadway, maybe this will be your gateway into a new appreciation for the genre. At least I hope so. So that's all for this episode, everyone. I appreciate your indulgence on that final segment, and I hope you've enjoyed everything else presented in this hour or so, and that you'll be back for more next time and in the farther future. If you got anything you want to say about that potentially unpopular position or anything else you've heard on this or other shows, you can contact us at info@progtopia.com, or you can go to our social media pages on Facebook and Twitter. We got some plans already in motion for the next installment, so if you want to keep up with what we're doing, you really should get with us on Facebook and Twitter to keep up with all the news, and you can go to progtopia.com for past episodes of the show that are all archived there for you. I'll play you out with a little more from our guests in Circuline from the Circulive Majestic recording, and I thank them once again for being on the show. Progtopia's opening theme music is from the Salvation Song Suite by Galahad on their album Beyond the Realms of Euphoria, and the Prog Squad's intro and outro are excerpted from Aftermath by Soul Secret on their album Closer to Daylight, both used with permission. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you next time in a land called Progtopia. I turned on.